Side 3. Once you are awake and you begin to jot down the contents of your dream, do so in the present tense. So write things like, I am walking across a landscape. I can see that there is a castle high on the hill. The front door of the castle is made of bronze. On the bronze door is a symbol of a gargoyle or whatever. And as you write them in the first person, it allows you to have an immediacy or a feeling or an identity with that dream. The very worst time to try to analyze a dream is once you've just woken up. And the reason for this is that once you wake, your brain speed begins to quicken into the beta level, and you move up from 7 to 14 cycles a second up to, let's say, 14 to 22 cycles a second. And so you're in the currency of the waking state. You're in the language of the waking state, but your dream was in the currency or in the language of the alpha state or the REM state. What's best to do is to leave the dream for the moment and come back to it later in the day, especially after your body has become tired by the activities of the day. It's then easier for you to get back into that meditative or alpha state in order for you to properly analyze your dream. On the other side of this tape, we've included a recording of an alpha metronome. And basically, it's a series of little bips that run at approximately the alpha brain speed, and it allows you to enter into that low state of mind. What happens is that your ear hears the bips and the brain adjusts to that speed. Once you get back into alpha, it is more easy for you to understand the symbology of your dreams, because that's where they came from in the first place. Dr. Fritz Perls, who was the most influential of the Gestalt psychotherapists, devised a scheme or a system of dream interpretation that is extremely effective. And basically, the way that he taught it originally, you sat in a chair and you had an empty chair facing you. And so you were your personality in the one chair, and then you moved over to the other chair and you became the dream personality. And you talked to yourself, so to speak. You can use Dr. Perls' system without the two chairs. What you do is you go into the alpha state and you begin to move through your dream in the first person and in the present tense. So you say, I'm walking across a landscape. I am the landscape. And as you talk about the landscape, you ask the landscape what it symbolizes to you. So you begin the dream by discussing being the landscape. And so the landscape would say, I am the landscape in Harry's dream. I symbolize peace and tranquility, let's say, for example. And then you talk the landscape's character or the landscape's part throughout the whole of the dream, discovering what that landscape symbolizes to you and your inner mind. Then you would move to the castle, and you would say, I am the castle in Harry's dream. I represent the physical body, say, for example. Parts of my ramparts are crumbling. They are crumbling because I believe that my physical body is in not as good as health as it should be. Then you go into the doors and you say, I am the bronze doors on the castle in Harry's dream. I am bronze because I symbolize strength and power, or whatever bronze symbolizes to you. And by going into each and every symbol in the dream, you can begin to throw up from the inside of you what that symbol actually means. Often, you'll be extremely surprised, for the symbol will have a meaning or a connotation that you are not completely aware of. As you re-enter your dreams and you analyze them in this way, all that information comes up to you and can be very, very useful to you in understanding your life. As you begin to recall your dreams, you'll notice that you have various types of dreams. They're kind of like prompting dreams where our inner mind reminds us of things that we haven't done or things that have been crowded out of the day. You know, an appointment, an obligation, some unsaid or unfinished business. There are warning dreams, which basically are dreams that sort of alert you to the fact that your destiny is moving into a direction that you may not wish it to go. Some of those can be like culled from the contents of vague possibilities, and others come from possibilities that are more strong for you. When you see a warning dream, realize that it is not reality. It is just a warning. And that if you change your consciousness and you change your feelings, you can easily erase that possibility pattern from your destiny or from the feelings around you. If a dream is the forerunner of bad news, then just watch it as such and understand that it's there to help you avoid the bad news, not to experience it. Another particularly interesting type of dream, I think, are clairvoyant dreams. And again, that is usually because of the subliminal information that you've picked up during the day, as was discussed in the past. But sometimes clairvoyant dreams can be prophetic, as was said, or they can be a picture of, like, how you feel in relation to the world. You have to understand that a dream is not object reality. It is basically subject reality, meaning it is your reality. So it is not an accurate portrayal of how reality actually is. It is more an accurate portrayal of how you see reality. And so when you have prophetic dreams or clairvoyant dreams, again, understand that you are in command of the situation. And anything that you see that's coming to you from the future can quite easily be changed. The other type of dream, of course, that we experience from time to time are like shock dreams or nightmares. Usually nightmares are, let's say, for example, the replay of some anxiety during the day. Or often nightmares can be caused by, like, physiological functions in the body, disturbances in the body. The sort of the old wives' tale of the fact that you get nightmares at night if you eat cheese or protein late, in fact, is very true. And usually, if you have large amounts of protein intake late at night, it will affect the amount of nightmares that you experience. And so if you suffer from nightmares, one of the things you may consider is not eating any large amounts of protein after, let's say, about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I've had this experience myself because I spent a certain amount of time in South America. And there, it's the habit of people to take a nap in the afternoon, the famous sort of Spanish siesta, and then go out at 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night and continue their business. And usually those people go out to dinner, like after the office is shut, and the office is shut very late at night, and so do the shops. And so I found myself, while I was staying in South America, often eating at like 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. And while I was there, I had these most incredible nightmares that really, really disturbed me and disturbed my balance. And it wasn't until, like, I'd been there about a week that I realized what was happening. And so I changed my eating patterns, and when I went out to dinner at night, I just sort of ate salads and soups and light things and only took the protein in during the day, and all of a sudden my nightmares were gone. So you may want to consider that if that's one of the areas that troubles you at night. Because your brain is active throughout the whole of the night, it reacts to certain stimulus or certain noises that are around you. And another type of dream that you may experience is where your mind or your brain hears an outside noise, let's say like a motorcycle, and then you wake up and you've dreamt of driving along on a motorbike. Or, for example, you may have dreamt, let's say, of being executed in the French Revolution by this guillotine that falls from a great height and chops off your head, and you wake to find that the chandelier is like wrapped around your neck. And so some of the symbology of dreams is the fact that you have been interrupted like that, or something has happened to you to influence your dream. Another type of dream that's very, very common are sexual dreams, where there's some kind of sexual encounter or some kind of sexual interplay that goes on within the dream. Usually what happens in sexual dreams, unfortunately, is that you don't actually follow through to the final conclusion. Something always happens to stop the sex act happening, and I've always thought that that was incredibly unfortunate. I think that may be part of our inhibition to sort of complete that, or it may be part of our programming. And of course, it's also partly the fact that while you are asleep in a sexual dream, even though the sexuality, or you may have, you know, you may say, for example, experience an activation of the sexual organs, there isn't usually any way that you can perform that sex act because you're asleep. And even though you may be sleeping with your husband or your wife or your lover, they're asleep as well. And so I think what happens is that the mind is not able to, let's say, motivate the body to complete the actual function in the physical state. And so somehow those dream sequences tend to stop just short of going all of the way. The other thing that I think is one of the most fascinating areas of the dream state are lucid dreams, and I want to talk about those for a moment, because if you can find yourself awake inside a dream, you have the possibility of experiencing a dream in a very real form, and in fact you can actually learn to conduct the dream or change the dream according to which way you want it to go. Some of you may have already experienced spontaneous lucid dreams where you're dreaming and you know that you're dreaming. And that's what the fun is. In lucid dreams, we can fly, we can move around, we can visit other places, we can travel. It's really a form of recreation. But also, being awake in the dream allows you to be very intimately connected to its symbology and its understanding. And it really, really helps you to come to a more integrated sense of self. The way to set up lucid dreams is the way to set up dream recall. Basically, all you have to do is to say to yourself, I want to be awake in my dreams. And as you begin to tell your mind that you want to be awake in your dreams, it will begin to create that for you. The first technique that is recommended is that you begin, as you go through daily life, asking yourself, am I dreaming? As you begin to ask your mind, am I dreaming, then when you get to the night stage and you ask yourself, am I dreaming, sooner or later the mind will answer you back, yes, we are dreaming. And so by asking yourself that question as you walk around in waking reality, you set it up to ask yourself the same question at night. The way that I taught myself to be awake in my dreams or to create lucid dreams was twofold. The first thing that I did was I recorded a tape of my own voice that said, am I dreaming? Am I dreaming? Am I dreaming? And so on and so forth. And the tape lasted about 30 minutes. Obviously, it was a bit of effort to record it. But what I did was, I played it at night while I went to sleep. And so my mind kept on asking itself, am I dreaming? Am I dreaming? And eventually, I found that I was dreaming. And I could watch a dream and understand that it was a dream and understand the symbology of that dream. The other thing to do to set up the lucid dream is to begin to train your mind to go to very, very low levels of brain state and stay awake. And the way I did that was first I became accustomed to using an alpha metronome, and then I purchased a theta metronome. And the theta being so much lower than alpha and oscillating at approximately 4 to 6 cycles a second, I learned to hold a very, very low brain rhythm and be in theta. Once you get into theta and you get completely relaxed, providing you can stay awake, you'll begin to go through the hypnagogic state, and then you'll move into non-REM dreams and you'll be awake. As you train your mind to enter these trance states of consciousness and to watch that symbology, then what happens is that when you actually enter the sleep state, it is already used to searching for symbols or looking for symbols, looking for information. And so what you're really doing is you're setting up an intention or an affirmation that I want to be awake during the night. Once you realize that you're in a lucid dream, then you can begin to experiment with creating the affirmation that you can change that dream or you can begin to direct that dream. I think the fun part of lucid dreaming is flying. And it's not only a wonderfully, like, liberating experience, but it allows you to have this sort of exhilaration or entertainment as you, like, mooch around the countryside. The very first time it happened to me, I noticed that I was flying over a field that I was familiar with. And it was wonderful to, like, have this sensation of being, like, 4 or 5 feet above the ground and going at approximately 20 to 30 miles an hour. And what I found even more exhilarating was that when I was flying along this field, along or beside a sort of a row of trees, when I got to the trees, all I had to do was, like, think, I want to turn left, and I began to fly around the trees and head off in another direction. And so that allows you to feel liberated as a human being. It allows you to feel that in spite of all the manipulations and all the restrictions and all the imprisonment that we experience as human beings, as everybody imposes their desires and their wishes upon us, here we are, we have this inner personality that can actually fly, that can actually feel that liberation. As we develop that reality outside of our body, or as we understand the symbology of what is going on outside of our body, we can begin to understand the symbols inside of oneself. So it's almost like creating this kind of what Americans would call self-talk. And self-talk is where you're talking to yourself or you're explaining to yourself what is going on. If you're walking through, let's say, a street during the waking day, you can look at the symbols in the street, the cars, the people, anything that is happening that is unusual, and you can talk to yourself about what is going on. Hey, I'm walking down this street. I see this unusual person walking across from left to right. They have a hamburger in their hand. The hamburger drops out of their hand upon the sidewalk, and so on. And you begin to talk to yourself about what these things mean. The more you demand answers for what you're looking at in the waking state, the more those answers are there in the dream state. Lucid dreams are hard in the first part of the night as you move through the first REM stage because of the need for the body to, like, use that time to reprocess and to go through the psychological aspects that we talked about before. Usually, lucid dreams will be in a later part of the night. And so, again, you can set your alarm clock or you can just demand of your mind that you want to be awake in the dream. Amazingly enough, that's all you have to do. There really isn't any other technique other than demanding of it. And then bit by bit, eventually, you'll find yourself awake in the dream state. It may take you a week or two. It may take you 10 or 20 attempts. But once you've achieved it once, then the lucid state comes to you more and more rapidly, and it becomes a natural part of your dream time. It is actually one of the most exciting aspects of the dream time because it allows you to enter into the color or to the fantasy of dreams, and that you can bring into your daily life to color your life more beautifully, to make it more exciting, to make it more original. The other thing that I think is very, very interesting that is very closely associated with dreams is the out-of-body experience. And quite often you will wake up and you'll find that you're actually out of your body. And this is an incredibly thrilling experience because it's almost like an externalized dream. There is your body below you and you find yourself floating around the room. Many people have experienced this kind of spontaneous out-of-body experience, but you can actually begin to generate it so that you know how to do it at any time that you wish. One of the techniques that I was taught that I found very, very useful, added to like techniques that I've learned for myself, is to basically lie down north to south and to begin to elongate your body with your mind. And so what you do is you put your consciousness like where your head is, and you take your head or your body back outwards through the top of your head, 3 or 4 feet, and you establish a new length for your body. Then you run your consciousness down to your feet and you elongate your feet 3 or 4 feet out ahead of you. And so now you've got this like a long elastic type of body that's like 6 feet or more longer than its natural shape. Then what you do is you take your consciousness to your right arm and you extend your arm out almost like gorilla fashion. So it's down towards where the new length of your feet is. And then you go to the other arm and you do the same. Then what you do is you run your mind back down to your feet and you create a curve or parabola of energy that like runs like an arc from your feet high above your body to where the new position of your head is. You hold your consciousness where your head is for a moment, and then you run another curve down through the floor and back to the new position of your feet. And so as you're doing this, you're expanding with your mind your whole body process or your whole body energy. You're beginning to say, hey, I am elastic, I am bendy, I can move my consciousness out of this body. You've now got your consciousness down at your feet and you create another long, wide arc along the floor and curve that back to your head and then go from your head and create another curve or arc back to your feet. And so here we are, we're continuing this expansion process. You hold that in a meditative state for a little while, and then you begin to see your body puffing up as a balloon. You see your whole body getting fatter and fatter and bigger and bigger. And as you expand your body, tell yourself that you want to hover above your physical body. At the point where you begin to engage in an out-of-body experience, your body will have to be deeply entranced. It'll be almost as if you can't feel your limbs, but you're still conscious. As you move yourself out of your body, hold yourself about 18 inches with your mind above your real physical body, and just keep that level of concentration there without allowing any extraneous thoughts to come into your mind. Then from that position of hovering just above your physical body, roll off to the right like a log and feel yourself rolling half a dozen or a dozen rolls so that it feels like you're rolling away from your physical body. Complete those rolls, hold that concentration for a moment, and then roll back So again, you're hovering above your body. Now roll away to your left and complete those rolls. Hold that concentration for a moment and then roll back. So again, you're hovering above your body. As you create this elasticity in your astral body or your inner body, you begin to set up conditions where you'll be able to disengage from the physical body totally and still remain awake. In other words, you'll be able to hover outside of your body and look back down at your sleeping physical body. The next point of concentration, or the next part of this exercise, is to hover above the body with your body north to south and your astral body north to south. And then with your mind, very, very gradually, rotate your astral body so that your astral head is where your physical feet are and your astral feet are where your physical head is. In other words, you turn the whole of the physical, or you turn the whole of the astral body so that it is lying in the opposite direction to your physical body. When you do that, you will experience a very odd sensation. And if you have learned to concentrate so that you can hold your consciousness without allowing any extraneous thoughts to come into your mind, you are basically going to be able to set up the full out-of-body experience. Hold the body in this upside-down state and demand of your mind that it notices everything, any unusual occurrences, any unusual noises, any vibrations that seem to begin to happen inside that astral body, and become aware of that. You may find that you have to do these exercises for like quite a few times, 10 or 20 times, before you can begin to really feel confident of moving out. As you begin to move out, you'll have this fear of like somehow being detached from the life force of the body. It is almost like the death of the personality or the death of the ego. And so there's a resistance to making that final transition away from the physical body. Hold your astral body upside down, and then once you've held that for a short period of time, rotate it back very, very slowly to its natural position. And as you're rotating it back so that it is in alignment with your physical body, turn it so that it is facing your physical body. Look at yourself looking upwards, so to speak, and lower yourself so you're almost nose to nose. And as you look at yourself nose to nose, try to identify with being in the astral body and not being in the physical body. Then once you've held that concentration nose to nose for a moment, now begin to lift yourself up and again hold a concentration at about 18 inches. Do that for a moment or two and then flip the astral body back up the other way. So now the astral body is lying on its back facing the ceiling in the same way as the physical body is. You're constantly moving along. You're constantly trying to like create this fluidity in the astral body. Your next point of concentration or your next exercise is to lower the astral body back into the physical body. Again, this is nothing more than just using your mind to have it do that. And as it's lying inside the physical body, try to drop the whole of the astral body from the feet end down through the floor. So the astral head remains where the physical head is, and you're trying to almost like, let's say, a bar or a piece of wood that would drop at 90 degrees down through the floor. So in the end, you're going to wind up with your physical body lying north to south and your astral body standing through the floor. See if you can do that. It's not so difficult to do. And as you begin to feel the astral body dropping through the floor, again, you begin to feel this incredible fluidity or elasticity that it has. If you can hold that thought of it being like standing through the floor, then bring it up. Bring it up again so that now it's lying with its face flat on the floor. So you've got your physical body lying on its back facing the ceiling, and you've got your astral body behind you facing the floor. As you begin to create these pendulum sweeps and these arcs with your mind, you're like maneuvering yourself within this campground of the possibilities. Try these exercises on half a dozen or a dozen occasions, and then eventually when you get confident that you've developed this elasticity and you get confident at being able to hold your entire consciousness in this low level of mind, then you're ready for the out-of-body experience. And how you set that up is you go through all of these exercises that have been described so far, and then you hover your astral body above your physical body. There's a couple of systems for coming out. One of them is to create that roll again to your right or to your left and spin it very, very quickly. Okay, and in the spinning, you'll find yourself click out. You may feel a whooshing noise, or you may feel a vibration being set up that kind of pervades your entire body. The other possibility is to lay your whole astral body above your physical body and just demand for it to sit up. One of the exercises that will help to create that vibration is to visualize there being a wheel at the bottom of your astral body, this spinning wheel that is down by your feet. And then run your entire body through that wheel. It is almost as if your whole body is moving through the spinning wheel. And as you run that wheel from your astral feet to your astral head and back down again, you can run that up and down your body. And as you begin to do so, it sets up an oscillation or a vibration that eventually will blip you out. All of this stuff is very sort of like hit or miss. You have to try it out and discover what works for you. I read in one of the old out-of-body experiences book that one of the ways to set up the out-of-body experience was to, like, not drink any liquid for hours and hours before you tried the experiment, and then to hover your astral body above the physical body and demand that that astral body go off to the kitchen for a glass of water. I've never tried that experiment myself personally, but I understand that it can work, but somehow I feel it's a bit extreme. The whole idea of being awake inside this out-of-body experience is for it to be a pleasant experience. Once you get out and you can see your physical body back there, then you enter into a whole nother dimension of consciousness, a dimension of consciousness that includes astral bodies, spirits. It includes all sorts of, like, hocus-pocus that you can experiment with. I must say that when I've done it myself, I've absolutely terrorized myself out of my cotton-picking mind. But again, that's part of experiencing life, and it's part of, like, understanding. And at any time that you want to get back into the body because you feel that something's going on out there that is too scary for you to handle or too unusual, all you have to do is think of, like, one limb of the body, let's say your right hand, and you tell your mind to move your right hand. And as you make that move, and sometimes it may be difficult to actually create that move in your physical body because it is so entranced, but you'll get the hang of it sooner or later. You tell your mind, move my right hand, or I want to move my right hand. And as you move that hand, then your astral body clunks back into your physical body. Sometimes that may feel a bit of a shock. It almost may seem like, you know, you've thumped back in there. But anyway, although it is a little uncomfortable, it will not be painful. And so as you learn to experiment and as you learn to come out of the physical body, the first experience you have is in your actual surroundings, let's say in the bedroom where you're doing this experiment. And then later on, what you will do is you'll discover doorways of consciousness that are close to that dimension. And you can begin to will your astral body down those doorways. As you move down those doorways, as you move down those tunnels, you enter into other dimensions of consciousness, other areas of evolution. The physical plane is like one evolution, which is like, let's say, external reality is what we come to experience here. But deep, deep inside, there are these other levels of evolution, the heavens and the hells that have been described in, for example, Emanuel Swedenborg's work, are these inner worlds, and you can teach yourself to become a part of those inner worlds. The key to that, I think, is theta. And I've been involved in theta meditations now for almost 12 years. As you learn to hold a deep theta rhythm, bit by bit, the electromagnetic force field that surrounds the physical body and the inhibition of the brain is broken down. And so in the end, you can penetrate into these other worlds and you can have a vision of spirit worlds. And I've done that on many, many occasions. It's helped me understand physical reality and it's helped me go beyond the fear of death. I've literally penetrated into dimensions that have like quasi-physical beings, and I've penetrated into worlds that would be described as like spirit worlds or hell or heaven. Some of them are like utterly revolting and incredibly frightening. Other of them are sort of celestial heavens that are exquisitely beautiful. But every time I've succeeded in like moving down that tunnel, I've always had an incredibly moving experience, and it's taught me a lot about life. One final thing I want to mention in that whole tunnel experience, or this whole out-of-body experience, or these inner journeys which are created in Theta, is that when you can get past the whole thing of physicalness, on the other end of the tunnel is the celestial light. And just one glimpse of that light is so awe-inspiring, so like transcendent, that it totally changes your life, because you understand what true love really is. You understand the magnanimousness of the human spirit, and you see your life in heroic terms. For we get so wrapped up in day-to-day living that sometimes we forget that we are in fact on a heroic journey through the earth plane. And even though we may seem weak and our lives may seem confusing and difficult at times, in fact all of that anguish and all of that confusion and all of that weakness is part of our coming to an absolute strength or an absolute power inside our life. Just to recapitulate, I think the whole process of discovering your dreams and learning to interpret them is part of this psychological unraveling of who am I. And the more you experiment with these inner worlds, these trance states, the more you experiment with understanding yourself, the more you can become a more powerful, more resonant, more assured person. On the second side of this tape, we have this alpha metronome. Anytime that you want to interpret one of your dreams, just turn to the metronome tape and play it and run through the symbology of your dream in the same gestalt way as I talked about earlier on, and you will understand and you will be able to access an incredibly fruitful part of your inner mind. This is the end of the side. Please fast forward.